Hi, I'm Maureen Ciaccio, your host for the Ask a Sustainable Builder podcast. Our guest today is Sarah Malio, a Vermont licensed architect from White Oaks Studio in Littleton, Massachusetts. Sarah is a certified passive house consultant and a certified permaculture designer, and is pursuing her Master's of Architecture at UMass Amherst to study the potential of sustainable land building systems. Today we're going to discuss permaculture as it relates to home design, the five aspects of sustainability, and the design process from discovery through construction. We're extending the time you can participate in our contest to the end of September so that we can get more entries, which means it will be fairly easy to win because we don't have too many entries yet. So please go ahead and enter, rate and review this podcast on your favorite platform, take a screenshot, and mail it to us at askasustainablebuilder@gmail.com. And of course, it would be awesome if you could share this podcast on social media and spread the word. We're going to give away a gift certificate to Samba Soul, where they sell beautifully printed flip-flops for everyone. They use eco-friendly raw materials, Brazilian 100% recyclable rubber, and print with non-toxic transfer technology. And they are beautiful and fun designs. You can check them out at sambasoul.com. That's SAMBA-SOL.com. The gift certificate has been generously donated by Samba Soul owner Carrie Johnson. So thank you, Carrie. So let's get to our featured guest, Sarah Malio. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and how you got started, especially being interested in sustainable building, architecture for sustainable building.
Okay, so I'm Sarah Malio, owner of White Oak Studio. And we're a sustainable residential design firm outside of Boston. And I started my firm about 2 years ago. I always wanted to have my own architecture firm, at least since high school, college. So I'm really excited to be achieving my dream here. And as far as sustainability, I've always been, you know, somewhat interested in the environmentalism, sustainability. But at one point I started to get really interested in homesteading, actually. And so in permaculture, and I sort of started to come at it from that angle and realizing that the architecture that I've been doing can have a big impact and be a big player in sustainability. And got super excited about that.
Cool. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about how that journey from like homesteading and seeing how that could play into architecture, how that developed a little bit. How did you see that, like one leading into the other?
Well, it's about, you know, the working with nature you know, I never really got the time to actually delve into homesteading and actually do it for myself. And now that I have my own firm, I may not ever actually really do it, but that's okay because I'm living my other dream. But it opened me up to permaculture and a whole lot of other sustainability topics. And I started to see all these really cool things that people were doing with buildings and plants and landscape and seeing what a difference you can make through the built environment. It's the built environment constitutes a huge portion of our carbon footprint. I believe I looked it up recently. I think for the U.S., the occupational cost of heating, lights, appliances, cooling for a building is something like 40% of the carbon generated in the U.S. each year.
Wow.
You add in the construction of new buildings, something like 8%, and you get almost half of the carbon generated in the U.S. each year is generated from buildings.
Wow.
Either from running them or from constructing them.
Wow, that's significant.
Yeah, it's huge. So this is, you know, buildings are a really big environmental problem. The super cool thing about it is that they can also be a super big solution. You can really turn them on their heads, and with just, you know, a little bit more investment, some thoughtful design, some innovative, even not so innovative construction techniques, you can get a building that's carbon neutral.
Cool.
You get into the innovative and you start to build buildings that can actually take carbon from the air and store it and start to reverse the environmental problems that we've caused.
Wow.
So that's part of why, you know, the more I learn, the more I'm like, you know, this stuff is really cool. And it can really, you know, you can really make a big difference here.
Exactly.
House by house,
mm-hmm.
Building by building. But you can do it. And it's not, and just to make a carbon neutral house, you don't have to go that far off conventional construction.
Right. That's pretty amazing that we're getting that close. You know, our all these ideas that people are trying out and are seeding mm-hmm. with are getting that close to being, you know, this is going to be the way things are built. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I kind of sometimes think about the sustainability in buildings as kind of being in its adolescence.
Mm.
You know, it's been around long enough that we most of the basics are pretty well established and thought out, and we've figured out a bunch of things that don't work that we thought was going to work really well, but don't turn out to work that well, and figured out what actually does work pretty well. Mm. But then there's all of these sort of, you know, kind of innovative materials and alternate design ideas and natural buildings and indigenous and work with the land that, you know, kind of keep changing and kind of keep it us all on our toes a little bit, trying to refine the basics.
Back to the permaculture thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just briefly describe what that is? Because I have the vaguest idea.
So permaculture was developed in Australia in the 70s, that golden time. And it comes from permanent agriculture. So it's mostly focused on agriculture, but the concepts behind it can be applied to a whole host of things. I mean, I know people who have applied it to economics, you know, social things. The idea behind it is both really simple and really complex, and that is to look at nature's grows things quite well. Nature's very good at growing things and keeping things in balance and working things out. So let's look at nature. Let's, you know, as we plant our plants and our crops, instead of throwing all these pesticides on them, let's look to how does this plant survive in nature? Because obviously it does.
Mm-hmm.
What insects and bugs and nutrients and water and other plants work with it and around it to keep it healthy and survive the things that work against it and are, you know, trying to eat it or kill it or whatever. So really studying nature and ecosystems and how they function. And there are like 12 principles, some of them are like multifunctionary, you know, try to make things do more than one function, be multifunctional. You know, catch and release, you know, store energy and then release it slowly. You know, there's a lot of different aspects of these books, you know, reuse, recycle, you know, all these sorts of things that can be, you know, concepts that can be applied to a lot of other areas.
So it's kind of like seeing the ecosystem that exists in nature, like in all of nature, and yeah. You have this little plot of land for homesteading, and you know, you have maybe starting with a certain number of plants, or maybe you're doing some gardening, or you have some flowers and some vegetables, and you are trying to set up a balance of things so that they are kind of protecting each other from pests, or they're,
yeah,
you know, so some need water, some don't, so it's a good mix.
Yeah, so it's the idea is to set up, instead of just setting up one monoculture and then, you know, spraying it with pesticides, the idea to set up a guild.
Ah, a guild.
Of different plants that kind of support each other and will help each other to grow. And then also to you know, work in animals. Like, you might have the ducks or the chickens come through at certain times to eat different bugs, but not at other times because you don't want them to eat the fruit. You know, chickens can kind of just eat the plants and the bugs. Ducks tend to eat more just the bugs. Saying, you know, you don't have a slug problem, you have a duck deficiency.
That's
and I know ducks. Yeah. And I know they're using that in Japan in rice paddies. They're bringing ducks in to come and get the weeds and the bugs. So the idea of using what nature has to try and grow the things that people want, you know?
Right. Or putting bat houses up near your house to get the mosquitoes so you don't have to use the mosquito repellent.
Yeah.
So when you're designing a home, does this, so you said that you've taken some of those concepts of the ecosystem, mm-hmm. and if you're designing a home or a renovation or something, do those complexities come into play?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the multifunctional and storing and reusing, storing energy and reusing are all very key when you're, designing a house, because it's much more efficient to have an aspect of the house do multiple duties. You know, you can have windows that need to be shaded in the summer so that they don't, but you want them to get lots of solar gain in the winter. And you can have a trellis outside that will, you know, shade it, make it nice and cool in the summer, let the sun in the winter. And at the same time, it could have grapes on it.
Oh.
You can get grapes off of it.
Wow, just open your window and pluck some grapes.
Exactly, that'd be nice. So really kind of thinking, you know, thinking a little bit bigger than just the box of the house, and really kind of thinking whole systems and integrated systems and how the house interacts with the land around it.
Right, that's really
is something that I find really interesting and intriguing and wonderful.
Right, and there are, I mean, you know, perhaps there's a way of situating the house where trees are shading it on the side, mm-hmm. of the shade, and but the it gets sun on the side that needs sun for solar or for getting, you know, sun into those windows in the winter, or, you know,
the siding of the house is very important. And it depends on where you live too. You know, different climates have different needs for, you know, that the same house design in Vermont is not going to work so well in New Mexico and vice versa.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I know that you have a presentation that you're working on that will be able to explain to us, so we're getting a preview of this, but I'll be able to explain, you know, there are five aspects, or I like to think of them as benefits of sustainable.
Yeah, so you know, a lot of people don't necessarily know what goes into sustainability and a sustainable house. And they're different, think of different things. Usually most people think of energy efficiency when they think of sustainability, or maybe low carbon. But there are a lot of different things that go into sustainability that make a house sustainable or green, to use another phrase. And they all kind of interact together to give you a whole host of benefits. I kind of break it into five different categories, which is the energy efficiency that most people think about, the low embodied carbon. Again, it's low, it's a small carbon footprint. Non-toxic chemicals, none of these, formaldehydes or chemicals leaching into the air to breathe and give problems. Climate resilience, I always remember a photo after one of the hurricanes a few years ago went through Florida, and everything was flattened except for this one Habitat for Humanity house, where they had invested in an extra $2,000 worth of tie downs or something like that. And, of course there was damage, but it wasn't flattened. It was, fixable. So, with climate change, we're going to have a lot more severe storms and severe weather that our houses and buildings are going to have to be resilient against. So trying to design for that. And I know here in the Northeast where I am, we don't get so much of those hurricanes and tornadoes as much, but we certainly get plenty of power outages and flooding and things like that. So to look at making the house resilient against those sorts of things. And then for the fifth one is community. These are complex, intertwined issues, and we really need the community to, they're big issues. We need to tackle this not at the just at the individual level, although certainly that's one good place to do it, but at the community level. And these solutions require a lot of teamwork and collaboration, not just one individual being able to solve all these problems. It really requires a collaborative team community effort. And those five things all kind of they work together. Your house is more energy efficient. It's going to have a lower embodied, low carbon footprint. If it, has non-toxic, healthier materials, it's, those tend to be more carbon based. So that's going to have a lower carbon footprint. And, if you have an energy efficient house, it's going to have its own, it's going to be very airtight. So you're going to have an air filtration system, which makes the air inside the house much more healthy. The climate resilience, energy efficiency feeds into, taking you through blackouts more easily and a whole host of other things. People often, ask about the benefits and why do I want to do this and extra cost. And honestly, at this point, code is slowly catching up to sustainable housing. And as they say, code is the worst house you can legally build. And honestly, at this point, in many areas, building a sustainable house is really an extra 5 or 10% over a code house. And in some cases, it can be the same, depending upon the design and your unique situation. There really isn't this huge cost upgrade that people imagine. And so, it's one of the benefits, the cost savings over time. Comfort, you don't have the drafts, you don't have the cold spots next to the windows. They're a lot more comfortable, quieter, healthier. They tend to have a higher quality.
Right.
Because building a highly efficient thermal envelope, you've got to have the airtightness, you've got to have a lot of insulation, and there's, so you've got to pay attention about all those cracks and gaps that, you know, with the old building, you know, people just sock them together, and it's like, oh, if you get a big gap over here, something doesn't quite fit, oh well. But you've got to pay attention to that stuff if you want to build a really efficient house. So the quality tends to be higher.
Right, much sturdier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you explain a little bit more what a thermal envelope is? Because of that term, and I think I know what it means, but it would be good to hear it for sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of the technical term for your walls.
Oh, the wall.
The exterior walls and your roof and your foundation.
Okay.
Those parts of the house that keep the rain and the weather and the heat and the cold away from you and protect you from the elements.
So, you know, can we do some of this stuff in renovations in much older homes? And is there a way to, you know, kind of push all this building toward not just making new homes better, but making, I know we do a lot of energy efficiency things to our homes, you know, mm-hmm. insulation, ceiling, some things. Is there something else people can do if they're going to do a renovation anyway?
Well, the fact of the matter is that a renovation in and of itself is actually more sustainable than building a new house.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got all the, you know, the existing structure that you're not, you know, drawing, you know, remanufacturing the factory for all that, you know, carbon that the factory is spitting out, or trucking to the construction site and all that. So in a way, just the fact that you're doing a renovation as opposed to building something new is sustainable. Mm. And then, you know, there's the obvious and more expensive aspects of, you know, putting a whole lot of insulation and making the thermal envelope, you know, upgraded and really tight. And, you know, that's going to have the biggest impact on the sustainability and the cost savings over time. But it's also, you know, kind of expensive to you know, rip off all your siding and put 6 inches of additional insulation all around and redo the window. I mean, it can be quite a lot to really do a deep energy retrofit.
Mm.
But, you know, you can do small things like adding storm windows. Actually, it will make if you've got old existing windows, just adding storms over them will make them almost twice as efficient. It'll make a single pane window act like a double pane. I said planting trees in strategic locations,
mm-hmm.
to provide shade. Mm-hmm. You don't need to use as much air conditioning. There are definitely a lot of, you know, little things that can be done to.
You're growing a grapevine in front of your window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
The one other thing I wanted to revisit, because I want to know more about that, is the you were saying that fifth aspect of community.
The world is an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And ecosystems are complicated. You know, just watch a couple of nature shows and you know, every animal and plant interacts with every other animal, and you get hundreds of thousands of interactions feeding onto each other, and we're living in that ecosystem, and our houses and our buildings need to live in that ecosystem in order to be sustainable. So we have to figure out how to design them such that they can work with it. And that's it as I've, you know, started to list out, there are a lot of different aspects to that and different things that need to be put into consideration. And so working together with a team can help solve those problems
right
better. And you know, and it's a lot of, you know, I've learned so much going to some of these conferences and listening to other sustainability experts, and we're all learning from each other.
Mm-hmm.
We can take that community where we're teaching each other and learning from each other, and then take it to the individual clients in their homes and give them the benefit of that.
Right.
But it's also, you know, and this is not directly related to sustainability, but we are social creatures. We are community creatures. This is how we need to live to be healthy and happy. And so we need to engage that community, and we need to work together, because that's the only way that we can really make these changes on large levels.
Right. I have seen so much of that going on, like people sharing ideas and getting together. And you would think these are competitors, you know, especially when they're from the same locality, but they are actually, you know, rallying around these ideas and sharing what they're learning, and everybody can get the benefit of collective thinking then.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that we're learning and we're moving into, I mean, we have so much. We have so much technology. We have so much energy. We, with our machines and computers and brains, we can do so much. I mean, 5% of our population now is feeding the entire country. Fine. I mean, it's something like that, you know, I really do think it's something like that. And I mean, that would be unthinkable 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get out of this mindset of scarcity and into this mindset of abundance, because it's true. We have so much in such abundance, and there's plenty to go around for everyone. So, and when we work together, we can achieve so much more than when we work individually and we're just competing against each other and fighting it out. I mean, that's, you know, the scientists and the innovators, you know, they don't do this alone. We don't come up with these ideas alone. We don't develop these ideas alone. It all comes about with other people.
Right, right. So, and if you're putting your minds together and coming up with better solutions, then ultimately that will benefit your business, because people want solutions.
Absolutely. And you get a wider network of people to step in and help you and give you better ideas and collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes stepping back and really looking at the big picture and the whole building together, and the whole systems and how the whole systems interact with everything else, you can get synergies and find ways to make these things work together more efficiently. And again, you know, make things multifunctional and save money. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways that sometimes these sustainable buildings can be built for close to what a conventional building would be built for. And that, you know, it requires a fair bit of extra thought in the design process, but then you get to reap the benefits for the life of the building. So I think a little upfront extra effort in the design phase can really save a lot of money and take you much further.
Right. You want to go into a little bit about your design process?
Usually if it's an existing house, come out and measure. Otherwise, you know, come out and visit the site, get a feel for what the existing conditions are, whether it's a building that's already there or the land and the site itself. And then you talk to the client and figure out how they live their life, how they want to live their life, and try to figure out how take that information, you know, take what they need in the house and what they need to live the life that they want to live, and try to incorporate that into the design, so that your design supports and encourages what they want to do. Like, for example, I did a house for a couple, and the husband loved to cook and use fresh ingredients in his cooking. So on the deck right outside the door from the kitchen, we had some planters, so we could plant some herbs and stuff that could be right there, and make it easy for him to get those fresh herbs that he wanted to use in his cooking. So trying with through little design moves, make some of those activities that you aspire to easier to do. So you're going to be more likely to do them. So anyway, so got a little off topic there. So first, you know, you look at the existing conditions, you figure out what the client wants, what the program and the scope of the design is going to be. And then you are in the schematic design phase, and you come up with a bunch of different design options, take a look at that with the client, get feedback from the client, figure out, you know, which design option they like the best, or figure out that they like that from that one, and that from that option, and that part of that option, and you kind of mush them all together and come up with the basic design that's going to, you know, maximize what they need, that's going to be the optimal design for them. And then you move into the design development process, and you start refining it. And it's a continual process of refining. And that, in the design development, you start talking about, you know, well, you know, in the schematic design, we said we wanted to put some mudroom built-ins over here. Okay, well, let's figure out what those are going to look like. You know, okay, in the schematic design, we put a porch around here. Well, you know, maybe we want to make it a little bit, nudge it over here, and maybe we make it a little wider over there, and we had a door over here. Well, maybe if we move that door over 6 inches, it's going to align better with this or that. So the schematic design figures out the big pieces. You know, we want a room over there, we want a door over here, we want a porch over here. And the design development says, okay, well, exactly what size is that porch going to be? Exactly what are those built-ins going to be? You know, you start refining that and talk about trim and in the case of houses, you know, tiling, or some, start to talk a little bit about some of the finishes maybe. And then you move into the construction document phase, which is where you really get into the details for the contractor. You know, you detail out the eave, call out all the different pieces of the wall, and the foundation, and, you know, the finishes, make sure everything's dimensioned. It's amazing how many notes and dimensions and details are needed. You know, you get the schematic design, you think, oh, this is all done, and then, you know, it's 5 pages, and you get to the construction documents, and it's 20 pages, and, you know, you've, you know, spent 3 times as many hours as you thought on putting additional notes to make sure that, you know, everything's clear for the contractor, so that when you go to build, the contractor has a really clear set of, and go to price, clear set of instructions on how to build the house. So that they can, you can make an accurate price and build it accurately. Mm-hmm. And then the final phase is construction administration. And that's where the architect or designer is on site during the construction of the house. You know, they usually would go out and visit the house. You visit the site once a week, maybe once every other week. It depends upon, you know, the phase of construction. Answer any questions that the contractor has. There's always something that needs to be clarified. If it's a renovation, there's usually some sort of surprise that we're not expecting. As, you know, you knock down the walls and say, oh, I didn't realize that was there. And then, you know, just kind of also just, you know, wish it weren't so, but sometimes, you know, checking up and making sure that the contractor is, you know, really looking at the documents and doing, you know, constructing according to the drawings. Mm-hmm.
So with a sustainable build in that process, in a, you know, high performance mm-hmm. build, that I'm sure that must happen at the stage where you're drawing up all the details.
Well, no, actually. It really needs to be thought at from the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a lot of things about siting, you know, where you, how you orient the house can have a huge impact on how energy efficient it can be. You know, if you've just got one short little wall facing the south in a cold climate, well, you're not going to get much heat gain. Mm. You know, you have all the windows facing north, well, that heat's just going to go right out. So it's really important that you start considering that from the very beginning. Mm. The other thing that should be mentioned is that, you know, I mean, certainly there's a lot of technical details in the sustainability and the, you know, there's a lot that goes into, you know, you definitely design the walls very differently in a sustainable house than a conventional house. But in a conventional process, usually the architect's kind of working on their own until you get to the construction documents, the pricing set, and then it goes out to bid for the contractors, which is all fine, and you can get competitive bids that way and good. But another way of doing it is to bring the contractor in early on, at the schematic design phase or the design development phase. And that way, the client and the architect and the contractor can all have a collaboration and a discussion on, you know, how best to build this. Because, you know, the architect may be, you know, fumbling along in designing this, and the builder might say, you know, oh, that's great, but you know what, if you just tweak this, you know, the way this wall is a little bit, then it would be much easier to build. And, you know, we could save some money. Mm. So sometimes it can just be, you know, little things that, you know, don't necessarily affect the design that much, but that can make it much easier for the contractor to build to build it, and therefore a little bit cheaper. And having the contractor on board early on can help identify some of those things and make the project run more efficiently and smoother.
And I suppose having a contractor that knows how to build sustainably, involving them in the process early, they might be able to make recommendations about improving the performance of the house as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a big help to have a contractor who has experience in sustainability, or at the very least is open to doing sustainable techniques. You know, it's, construction is a very risk averse industry. You know, the contractors are building this house and they're very expensive, and if something goes wrong, they're on the hook. So understandably, they can sometimes be, you know, I've been building it this way for 20 years and it's, I haven't had one fail on me yet, so gosh darn it, I'm going to keep building it this way.
Right.
And I'm not going to do any of these new fangled things.
And if they'd like to, the risk aversion says, don't do that. Just do it the way you've been doing it.
Right.
Is that where code, like improving the building codes, would raise the standard, and they almost, they would say, well, I have to do it now this way because it's code. So it's not like I'm on the hook for it, because it's how they say it has to be done.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's one of the important That's, you know, where codes become very important to kind of drive the quality and the baseline of buildings up.
Yeah.
And that's why they started having them, you know, because some contractors were building these, you know, awful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I wish it wasn't true. And there are, you know, there are some really wonderful contractors out there that are just, you know, a joy to work with. So I mean, I don't want to at all be come across as bashing, because you want to find those good ones, and you want to work on it. And some of the they have a treasure trove of knowledge and expertise to apply to the building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's nice to have those on board early, because you can really learn from their experience and what they've done.
Yeah, interesting. So we're going to end now, and thank you for your time and your expertise. And but before we go, I'd like you to let people know where they can find you and if you have anything's coming up.
You can find me on the web at www.whiteoaksstudio.com, and I'm in outside of Boston, and we'll travel wherever for the right projects. And
thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Hey, hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. I loved hearing about using permaculture to set up ecologically balanced surroundings around your home. And it was interesting to hear details about the design process and how architects depend on good contractors to bring practical knowledge to the design process. You can find Sarah's contact details in the show notes. Don't forget to enter the drawing for that $75 gift certificate for Samba Soul flip-flops. Rate and review the podcast. Take a screenshot of your review and email it to askasustainablebuilder@gmail.com. Name of the podcast @gmail.com. The randomly chosen winner will be contacted via email. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you wouldn't mind, share the podcast with somebody who might enjoy it. Please help spread the word so more people can understand how to build sustainably.